Did you know that driving under the influence of marijuana is illegal? Driving high will get you a DUI. And if you're wondering if law enforcement can tell you're driving high, well, everyone else can. Friends?
I can tell you drove high.
Parents?
I can tell when you drive high.
Relatives?
I can tell. You drove here high, didn't you?
So what makes you think law enforcement can't?
I can tell.
If you feel different, you drive different. Drive high, get a DUI. Paid for by NHTSA.
Listen, the way you sleep is unique to you. And that's why having a Sleep Number smart bed is so crucial. Because you can adapt to your changing needs for just right. Can't wait to nestle into bed luxurious comfort. So whether you need softer or firmer, cooler or warmer, you are never stuck. You can adjust your comfort whenever you like. And it gives you your best night's sleep. Night after night, year after year. I love my smart bed. My Sleep Number setting is 60. My wife's is 70. Just 10 numbers apart, but it means the world of difference because I can change my side of the bed to however firm or soft I want. And the same thing for Suze. So why choose a Sleep Number smart bed? Again, so you can sleep just the way you like. The only bed that lets you make each side firmer or softer whenever you like your Sleep Number setting. Sleep Number's biggest sale of the year is here. All beds on sale, up to 50% off the limited edition smart bed, limited time. Exclusively at a Sleep Number store near you. Sleep Number, official sleep and wellness partner of the NFL. See store or sleepnumber.com for details.
This is the Rich Eisen Show.
Let's get down to brass tacks here.
Live from the Rich Eisen Show studio in Los Angeles.
Why did Shane Steichen make the decision he made?
Jones, he showed his athleticism there on a naked bootleg.
I think you have to like just follow what he said all along, which was he was looking for somebody who could operate the offense at a high level.
Earlier on the show, NFL Network insider Tom Pelissero. Coming up, actor Eugenio Derbez. Plus, your phone calls, latest news, and more. And now, it's Rich Eisen.
Oh, yes. Hour number two of the Rich Eisen Show is on the air. Tom Pelissero is joining us shortly. There's lots going on in the world, certainly in the football world. And we're going to have our buddy Tom Pelissero give us the latest on everything going on.
Tommy P.
And Susie Schuster sitting in for Chris Brockman. Later on, you've got a news update coming up here on this program. There's lots going on, certainly in the NFL world today. Preseason action returns this weekend. Friday night, I'll be on NFL Network the entire night. Kurt Warner and our Monday guest, Gerald McCoy, will be in studio with me. So lots going on in the football world.
You busy, man.
Listen, what can I tell you? It's that time of year. It's all good. And we've got on our docket, normally this is the sort of stuff we talk about in June, July, when things are a little slower. Mm-hmm. But I just had to chime in on this.
Okay.
Because you know we're about pop culture as much as we are about sports here.
Absolutely.
Again, we've got the highly popular actor Eugenio Derbez coming in from Apple TV's Acapulco season 4. Final season currently going down right now, streaming every Wednesday, which you can see right here on Roku because Apple TV is found. And so bottom line, we don't usually talk about this sort of stuff when the football season's upon us. And we always appreciate when the Hollywood Reporter pays attention to stuff that we talk about here. But I must push back because for some reason they decided to put together a panel of folks who don't know what they're talking about. Should have reached out to me.
Yeah.
We're here. Arias Consulting is always available.
Or even me.
Top 25 sports movies of all time. And you'll see the issue I have with the list right off the bat, not because the number one sports movie of all time is Martin Scorsese's classic, De Niro's Jake LaMotta performance, Raging Bull, is number one on the list. It's kind of tough to call Raging Bull a sports movie. It's about more than just that. It does involve sports. But you can see of the top five, three of them are documentaries.
Yeah.
Hoop Dreams, number two, When We Were Kings, an incredible documentary about Muhammad Ali.
And Hoop Dreams was amazing.
And amazing documentaries. OJ Made in America. I mean, whenever you sit around and you say, what's your favorite sports movie? You're going to say that 10-parter on ESPN that they put in theaters so they can get an Emmy, an Oscar out of it, worthy of it.
Which, by the way, I watched a part of it last week. It is amazing, but not a sports movie.
Bull Durham is number four.
Where's Field of Dreams?
Hang on a second. I'm going to show you the top 25. And then we can comment on everything. But you cannot include documentaries as a sports movie. It's a sports documentary, a sports movie. It's just like, yeah, these were movies. Again, O.J. Made in America made its debut on ESPN, and they wisely put it in the theater, so they're like, oh, now it's available for an Academy Award. Pop up the top 10 list again, please, if you don't mind. Breaking Away is an outstanding movie, and it's about cycling. It's from the 70s. Eight Men Out is an outstanding movie. It is. That would be on a top 25 list for me. It's way up there. It's a John Sayles-directed film about the Black Sox. It is an outstanding movie. If you have not seen it, you should see it. Rocky being eight, as we all know, there's a pushback. We've had Carl Weathers and Sly Stallone on the show in our 10-plus year history. Both call it a love story.
Enough said.
But it is a sports movie. Still number boxing. Nine is what caused me to almost trash this whole list entirely. Yeah. I'm sorry. You cannot call Bring It On a sports movie, nor can you put it in the top 10 of a list.
Stop it.
This is an automatic 100% disqualifier. Disqualifier. No matter what you can think of it as a movie, there's not a soul that I know of that would consider that a sport. Like, what are we doing here?
Well, people consider cheerleading a sport.
I've never heard of The Loneliness of the Long Distance Runner. I'm sure it's a wonderful
that's
film.
My favorite.
It's from the 60s.
Stupid.
Here we go. Let's do 11 through 20 here. You'll recognize some. A League of Their Own, White Men Can't Jump. By the way, Bull Durham 4, White Man Can't Jump. Our buddy Ron Shelton getting his due right here, Suze.
Mm-hmm.
Top 12, two of the top 12 sports movies of all time. Sugar Offside.
Where is Field of Dreams?
Hang on. The Hustler. 20, the Hustler's 15. That's an outstanding movie, about pool. And then, of course, The Color of Money, another Scorsese movie with Paul Newman and Tom Cruise. Yeah. I wouldn't consider that a sports movie, though.
What's sugar?
The fast
things you put in. Yeah.
Is that like the untold Ray Allen story?
Again, my number one of all time, being 17 on the list. You can't say Bring It On is a better sports movie than Hoosiers. Like, what are we doing? Hoosiers is the sports movie of sports movies. End of story. It's got everything. A sports movie has to have a father-son dynamic, right?
I mean, it doesn't have to.
Well, I mean, the best ones are some sort of a dynamic like that. Coach-son, father-son, mother-son, something like that. All right? Something along those lines. So, the Hoosiers' mantra is what sports movies are all about. Underdog stories. Good Lord. I go on and on and on. Put up the last five. Suze, Field of Dreams isn't on the list.
Wow. I'm Googling the name of half of these, Rich.
Moneyball is an outstanding movie.
Yeah, that means
Slapshot is an outstanding movie. Million Dollar Baby, I get. And The Bad News Bears is a great way to start a list. 25th.
Challenges?
Field of Dreams, Major League, The Natural, The Sandlot, Caddyshack, Miracle, He Got Game, Remember the Titans, Any Given Sunday, Friday Night Lights, We Are Marshall, The Longest Yard, Rudy. We also could have put on that list as well. It just hits me. Blindside?
Yeah.
Like, I didn't see the list earlier, so I just jotted them down before we actually looked.
What are we
looked.
Doing?
This feels like a bunch of people sitting in a room
Cinema.
Who don't know anything about
Film.
Sports.
Film. Yeah, that's... Yeah.
Right? I mean, none of these people go to games. None of them sit there and watch the Jumbotron
or
listen to the music that's coming in and hearing Rudy chanting, which is, you know, makes you want to pass out. Or, you know, see Gene Hackman walking on. Like, none of these people actually watch sports. This is crazy. Field of Dreams? How many grown men have to sob wishing their dad was there to have a catch?
Bingo. The Natural ends, spoiler alert, with Roy Hobbs having a catch with his son in a cornfield.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. If I made a top 25 list, every single movie that's not on the list would be on the list.
Let's do it. You have your own show. You can do whatever you want.
Maybe we'll do that for tomorrow.
Yeah, like I said, I jotted some down, and some of them were the ones that were listed there, so I'm not sure.
No, and by the way, like, I love the fact that Raging Bull is number one. But I can't imagine you call that a sports movie. It's a movie about a sports figure.
But I wouldn't push back because it's boxing. Jake LaMotta was known as a boxer.
Of course.
So I wouldn't push back on it. It's kind of like the Die Hard thing. Well,
is it a Christmas movie or is it not?
He's a boxer, so I get it. But like A League of Their Own outside of the top 10 is insane to me.
That's, well, at least it's in the top 12.
Yeah.
At least it's on the list.
And Hoop Dreams was so different and so unique.
But it's a separate category.
Documentary.
It's a separate category.
There was a movie in the 80s that came out that made everybody want to crane kick somebody. Karate Kid.
Karate Kid. That's a sports movie.
Not on the list.
Is The Karate Kid really a sports movie? I
mean, the Loneliest Long Distance Runner? Like what?
I guess we're going down the classic movie channel here thing. I don't
Vision
know.
Vision Quest, because you know how I feel about Linda Fiorentino, so I had to say something about
that. Yeah, but that's not why you put a movie on the list.
Well, also wrestling. I mean, Loudon Swain had to wrestle Shoot. Like, come on.
That's the worst list
Rudy!
I've ever seen.
Where's Rudy? And I know how you feel about Rudy, but should be on this list.
Hold on a second. This is how much I hate this list. I'm pointing out Rudy's not on. That's how much disregard I have for this list.
Well, it's real right now, then.
Reach out. I feel like I do when I watch the competition committee in the NFL make decisions. Call me. Will you please? Mm-hmm. Give me a ring. I'm around. You know where to find me.
There is no sport list without Remember the Titans on it.
844-204-RICH is the number to dial. All right.
Now I'm mad, Rich. I'm going to be angry.
Let's go to Josh in Los Angeles. He's been waiting this entire time since we went on there. First in, first up. What's going on there, Josh?
Hey, what's up? How you guys doing today?
What's on your mind, Josh?
I wanted to do the win-loss record for the Las Vegas Raiders.
Okay. Win a little bourbon for us right here. You got to give us the autumn win, please. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yes, please.
All right. This sets the mood, doesn't it? Sets the table, does it not? All right, Josh in Los Angeles. What happens when Pete Carroll returns to his old haunt in New England to kick off the season?
That's a win.
That's a win. That's a 1-0 Raiders start. Then the Chargers come into town on a Monday night. What happens then?
That's a win.
That's a 2-0 start at the Commanders.
That's a loss.
Okay. 2-1 home for the Bears.
The Bears.
That's a game we should win. Knowing as a Raider fan, we're probably going to lose, so that's a loss.
2-2 at the Colts.
Win.
3-2 home for the Titans.
Win.
All right, we're above 500. Two above 500. When the Kansas City Chiefs stroll into town, what happens?
Win.
Oh, actually, they go to Kansas City. Pardon me.
Yep.
They win in Kansas City. Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
Okay.
Yep.
5-2 now. Off the bye, home for the Jaguars.
Win.
6-2 at the Broncos on a short week Thursday night on Prime Video.
That's a loss.
All right, now we're 6-3, home for the Cowboys on Monday Night Football.
Sorry, TJ, Cowboys are going down. That's a win.
I love how they apologize to TJ. 7-3, home for the Browns.
That's a win.
That's 8-3 at the Chargers.
Win.
That's 9-3, home for the Broncos.
That's a win.
That's a 10-3 record when you head into Philadelphia to take on the defending world champs.
That's a loss.
10-4 at the Texans.
That's a loss.
10-5 home for the Giants.
Win.
That's now 11-5 home for the Chiefs.
That's a win.
A 12-5 season.
Wow. I like it, Josh.
Says Josh in Los Angeles. All right. Thanks for the call, Josh.
Let's go.
Pete Carroll.
Turned it around.
Going 12-5 would be news.
Yeah.
And it would also be news to Joe in Maryland, who was the last one to play the win-loss game for the Raiders. He had him going 13-4. Mm. It's a sky-high situation going on right now. Very exciting. Rick in Columbus, Ohio wants to chime in here. What's up, Rick?
Hey, Rich. How you doing?
What's going on, brother?
Hey, I'm born and raised Columbus, Ohio.
Okay.
Never a Browns fan or Bengals.
Okay.
I became a fan after seeing the movie Brian's Song.
Mm-hmm.
Why ain't that on the list? What about Something for Joey?
Okay.
John Cappelletti.
How about Brian's Song?
Brian's Song is a beautiful movie.
How is that on the list?
That's another one, yeah.
I mean, again, this...
People, you know, if people see that movie, I think people get along more better.
This list is so disturbing to me. I'm wondering where Rudy is on the list, and I'm agreeing with someone from Columbus, Ohio. Mm-hmm. You understand what I'm saying?
I stuck with them. Still a fan. You know, Gale Sayers made me a Bears fan, and you know, Peyton kept me. But I mean, to me, take out your Beck.
Rick, and thank you very much. In Columbus, Ohio. Chiming in right there. James Caan, Billy D. Williams. Let's roll.
Yeah, Penn State.
Jeff in Detroit. What's up, Jeffrey? What's up, Jeff?
What goes on, Uncle Rich? What's up? Cousins.
Jeffrey.
Hey, listen, it's funny. I'm sitting up looking. I say, man, that guy looks good in that blue suit right there at Sports Center. Man, everybody's talking about it. Good morning, America. But
thank you, Jeff.
We have a special guest. Somebody that you know I love. Your wife.
Yes.
Questions for your wife.
Okay.
Over the last 50 years, I know you do sports, women's sports now and everything. Over the last 50 years, who has been the most influential sports figure in women's sports?
I have.
Oh, my God. Yes. Spoken like a true member of the family.
That's why she's your wife.
Hello.
I have an answer once you answer, Suze. I think I know who it is. Most influential woman in women's sports in the last 50 years?
Well, I go close to home with Cheryl Miller being one because she set the table.
Okay.
I mean, have to go Caitlin because of what she's done.
Oh, really?
Well
in the last 50 years?
I'm going to go, because she's changed the landscape. But then, who are you thinking?
Who, you know.
Billie Jean, because of your mom,
I'm my mother's
Jean
son.
Changed the, she, That's yeah, it. She, Billie she Jean set King. The table for women's equality. What do you think? What's your thought?
Jeff?
I have not heard this many people talk about women's sports since Caitlin Clark has gotten into the league, good, bad, or indifferent. And I do think she's a vessel in order to get their pay up as well as to get that spotlight shined on them. Because before her, you know, it wasn't this much hoopla about the WNBA, and now it's like every time you turn around, some type of article is coming out. I mean, she has created so much money for so many people in the industry, it's not even funny. So you might have to just go ahead and say her.
I mean, you have to make that argument because of the whole rising tides and the lifting ships. I mean, I think you look at what she's done, and she has made the WNBA every single day must have conversation. Paige Bueckers is going to be in our news update.
Yep.
We added that today because of her 44-point night. But I think, Jeff, there's something to be said for that. Now, I'm not discounting FloJo. I'm not discounting the Williams sisters. Thank you very much. Because I just feel like there have been so many women that have set the table for her to shine. But we wouldn't have a show like Women's Sports Now if we didn't have that continued attention to the WNBA like we have all the time. But I brought up Cheryl Miller for a reason, Jeff. Because she was so good so fast. And if she didn't have that catastrophic injury, then who knows who she would have become. I just feel
Here, how about this one? Mount Rushmore of women in sports.
Oh, boy.
Billie Jean King, Caitlin Clark, Cheryl Miller, and Susie Schuster. Jeff in Detroit.
Ooh, look at you shooting from the hip.
Well, we all know where I've got to go. When
That's
the
right. He
over.
Knows where he lives.
Thanks for the call, Jeffrey. Really appreciate it. Always great to hear from Jeff in Detroit. Tom Pelissero is going to join us next. What is going on in the NFL is just the general gist. That's next. This is the Rich Eisen Show. Hey, folks, let me ask you a serious question. Did you know that driving high is considered driving under the influence? That's right. Driving under the influence of marijuana is against the law in every state. That means even in states where marijuana is legal. That means driving high could get you a DUI. And if you think law enforcement officers can't tell when you're driving high, well, my friend, you're wrong. If you're high, they can tell. Your friends can tell. Your coworkers can tell. Even your parents can tell. Everyone can tell. So what makes you think that law enforcement officers don't know when you're driving high? You'd be wrong. They can tell, too. Driving under the influence of marijuana can slow your response time and change how you perceive time and speed. So even if you think you're fine to drive when you're high, you're not. Because the bottom line is, if you feel different, you drive different. And driving high is driving under the influence. So remember, drive high, get a DUI. Paid for by NHTSA.
The official HBO Hard Knocks podcast is back. I'm your host, Andrew Siciliano. We're joined by NFL and Hard Knocks insiders as the Buffalo Bills prepare to make history.
We're going to do whatever we can to bring Lombardi back here to Western New York.
Catch Hard Knocks, training camp with the Buffalo Bills on HBO Max. Then watch or listen to the Hard Knocks podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
Listen, the way you sleep is unique to you. And that's why having a Sleep Number smart bed is so crucial. Because you can adapt to your changing needs for just right. Can't wait to nestle into bed. Luxurious comfort. So whether you need softer or firmer, cooler or warmer, you are never stuck. You can adjust your comfort whenever you like. And it gives you your best night's sleep. Night after night, year after year. I love my smart bed. My Sleep Number setting is 60. My wife's is 70. Just 10 numbers apart, but it means the world of difference because I can change my side of the bed to however firm or soft I want. And the same thing for Suze. So why choose a Sleep Number smart bed? Again, so you can sleep just the way you like. The only bed that lets you make each side firmer or softer whenever you like. Your Sleep Number setting. Sleep Number's biggest sale of the year is here. All beds on sale. Up to 50% off the limited edition smart bed. Limited time. Exclusively at a Sleep Number store near you. Sleep Number, official sleep and wellness partner of the NFL. See store or sleepnumber.com for details. Back here on the Rich Eisen Show, Tom Pelissero joining us. Let's bring him on right now. My buddy from the NFL Network and NFL Plus and NFL Insider and all that good stuff. For Tom, this will be the most simple conversation you've had maybe in the history of this show because you're not going to be bothered by stupid ass photos and selfies and that sort of thing because Brockman's not here. Susie is more of an adult. Stop it, TJ.
Like, hey, your hair looks great. Your hair looks amazing.
Gee, your hair looks terrific.
Start with that like you would normally do.
You know?
He is the chief offender of the sending the videos, including the one that he's making right now, which I'm sure he'll send after this segment is over.
Okay. So you're... we're going to find out who is the chief offender, and you say it's TJ, it's not Brockman, to interrupt
poses. TJ is really the cinematographer who brings the studio to life when I'm here remotely with my boys and my lady Susie in studio
tonight. Okay, there you go.
The metronome.
Thank you for the inclusion. I do appreciate that because hair game meets game. And so
I wanted
to sit in this desk and have some kind of, you know, New England insouciance.
I would look at you. I believe in if anybody that sat in that chair, most hair ever. I would think.
There's really no doubt.
Okay, very good. I mean, in this one as well.
There's really no doubt.
All right. Good to see you, Tom. How are you, sir?
Tommy P.
Doing great. I feel like we've gotten a little jump start on trade season here with the cutdown deadline still 4 days away. It's always gets down to going into these third preseason games with the way they've kind of recalibrated with only 3 preseason games instead of 4 with the cutdown on the Tuesday instead of the Saturday. Teams start to look at these rosters and all these kind of down-the-line players or teams that are trying to free up cap space. There's more maneuvering than there used to be ahead of the final preseason games. But that final, some teams play tonight. Some teams don't play this one game at 10 p.m. Eastern time on Saturday night. After you get through those games, you know, depending exactly when you're playing, there's a lot of finalizing that needs to take place in terms of setting that roster by 4 p.m. Tuesday.
The current state of affairs between Micah Parsons and Jerry Jones. Jerry Jones was on Fox this morning. He had some comments yesterday. We heard from the coach. Brian Schottenheimer is like, I fully expect him to be there. Business will take care of it, all that sort of stuff. Is this different? Are we in a different world now than the usual? This stuff usually works itself out. What's your opinion on it, Tom?
We're in a different world right now because there is still, as of about 20 minutes ago when I was checking on this, no communication. There is no communication between the Cowboys and Micah Parsons' agent, David Mulugeta, in terms of doing a long-term contract. We can all point to, yes, CeeDee Lamb took forever. Dak didn't get done until a few hours before kickoff last year in Cleveland. But those deals were weeks and months in the making. With Micah Parsons, there, of course, were the conversations that now are well-documented between Micah and Jerry Jones, who thought he had a handshake, cocktail, napkin type of deal done back in March, whether it was because Jerry felt like this was Micah going back on his word, whether this is because Jerry simply is negotiating on his own timeline. Whatever it is, no one has called Micah's agent to try to get a deal done. There's not been a single offer in writing. There has not been a single conversation that would qualify as a contract negotiation. Is there still time? Yes, but 2 weeks from tonight, Rich, the Cowboys play the Eagles in the kickoff game on national TV. Micah has not practiced. He's been, from what I've been told, he's been great in the meeting rooms, the walkthroughs. He's doing all that stuff. But you still got to get your body in shape to play football. There's a conditioning element that goes into this, among other things. You know, at some point in the coming days here, Mike is either going to need to practice or he's not going to be ready to be a participant, certainly not a full participant, in the week one game. I know Brian Schottenheimer said yesterday he's confident that Micah is going to be out there in week one. I don't believe that there's been any promises made, though there's been an open and honest dialogue between Schottenheimer and Micah throughout the course of this process. The Cowboys, if you just base it on what Jerry Jones said several days ago, they seem to be looking at this as, hey, Mike is either going to come back and try to save the deal in March, or, hey, he'll just play it out on the fifth-year option here, and we'll worry about franchise tags and all that when we get to March.
That's, again, this is your bailiwick, and I'm sorry to be strolling into it in any way, shape, or form in a lane, but all I keep hearing is this is different. That's all I keep hearing. It's different. It's different because Jerry thinks this was a handshake agreement, and Micah's different in the fact that he is more than willing to take this to where players usually don't. That's what I keep hearing, Tom.
For years, if not decades, Jerry Jones, along with Bill Belichick, were the two people, the Cowboys and the Patriots, the two teams that would negotiate around agents' backs, that would bring a player in and sit him down and basically try to work out a deal and then basically inform the agent, hey, I just talked directly to the player. There's various rules about how that entire thing is supposed to operate here, but Jerry's always been kind of on his own program. And you know, those of us who have delved into the Netflix premiere, me, TJ, and Brockman were at the premiere last week in Hollywood while I was out there. You know, it's an excellent and interesting documentary, but it also shows how Jerry, his entire history has been, he does things a little bit differently. Certainly the contract negotiation, the fact that he's the GM and the owner, is one of those things. But in this case, you have an agent in David Mulugeta who negotiated over $1 billion of deals in the past year. He's not a difficult guy to get a hold of. And again, whether it is Jerry feeling like he got, you know, somebody pulled the rug out from under him, whether he's embarrassed, whether he's angry, whatever it is, he's never called. Nobody has called on his behalf and tried to hammer out a deal here. So that part of it is different, which then brings us to this. All right, what are the options and what are the different ways that this could go with Micah Parsons over the next, let's say, 14 days, which is the run up to the opener against the Eagles?
Yes, sir.
One possibility would be sometime in probably, let's call it, the next 5 to 7 days. He returns to practice. He says, screw it. I'm going to play deal or no deal. I'm under contract. I'm going to go out there and play with the guys and we'll worry about this after the season. That's one possibility. Second possibility is Micah, who, remember, has said this entire time that he has back soreness, and that's why he's not participating, because hold-ins are not a magic bullet to not get fined. However, if you're injured, that's a different type of a case. Micah could say, hey, my back isn't healthy enough, or hey, I'm simply not going out there. The Cowboys then at that point would have to decide what levers are they going to pull. They could suspend him for conduct detrimental to the team. They've already had the ability throughout this process, if they wanted to say, hey, you're not really injured, we're going to fine you, but they could start coming after his money. If he doesn't play in those games and he's not getting paid for those games, suspension or otherwise, certainly that's going to be significant money, but also for a guy who's going to sign a contract that's worth somewhere in the range of $45 million per year, you probably are okay taking the short-term financial loss. So that's the second possibility. The third possibility is that the Cowboys seriously entertain trade offers for Micah Parsons. And this is something that we have talked about going all the way back to Super Bowl Sunday, that there were internal conversations among the Cowboys, not necessarily about, hey, should we trade Micah? What can we get? But more so, is it wise to wrap up this much money in three players? We're already paying Dak 60 a year. We're playing CeeDee Lamb around 35. If they were to entertain offers, the price, in my mind, and based on my feel for the market, would be somewhere in the range of what the Bears sent for Khalil Mack to the Raiders a number of years ago. That was, you know, the headline was 2 first-round picks. Really, though, there was a second-round pick going back. There were other picks involved. It's like a little less than 2 first-round picks. If you're the Cowboys and that's the price, that would be a significant value, especially because then you're freeing up $40+ million per year in cash and cap space to rebuild at other spots. But does Jerry Jones want to rebuild when he's 82, 83 years old? It still seems unlikely. I know they've gotten calls. I don't know that the teams that have called entirely know if they're actually considering this or just having conversations. Right now, everything that's been said publicly by the Cowboys indicates that they are fully planning for Micah Parsons one way or another to be on the team in week one. If at any point they come off of that, there would be teams that would be highly interested in making a trade for Micah Parsons. We're just not there yet.
Mm. Rank them for me. You just gave those options. Rank them. Rank them. Because you left out one option. They sign him. You know what I mean? Because that let's throw that one in there. So you said, honestly, sure. So let's rank them. They sign him in the next 2 weeks. Before, because again, you pointed out that we're 2 weeks away from midnight actually striking. They sign him. He decides, I'm just, screw it. I'm going to return to play and we'll kick the can down the road. The Cowboys trade him, or the Cowboys start to fine him, or they basically, and where does a holdout into the season rank? Those are your five options, how this all plays out. There you go, Tom.
I know.
That's a top five. Tom Pelissero's top five. Of how this plays out.
There's been no productive conversation whatsoever.
I know, this is out of your lane. I strolled into your lane, you stroll into mine. You sit in this chair, you know how it works.
You and I right here on this show could figure out what the Micah Parsons extension has to be.
Exactly.
Cowboys, they like to do long
deals.
The
number's there. Yeah.
No agent's going to want it, your client to go and sign a six-year deal. So let's say, all right, let's cocktail napkin this like Jerry would like.
Let's do it.
4 years, $180 million. Somewhere in the range of $130 to $150 million guaranteed. Boom, done. He's a Cowboy through 2029. This entire storyline goes away. Right. It's not a hard deal to do, but they have not done anything since March to actually try to move that thing forward. And to my understanding, Micah's agent, David Mulligetta, has called them and basically said, hey, I'm ready when you are, but no agent is just going to sit there and negotiate against yourself. So it's just, it's an unusual type of situation. So let's set that one aside. Because one guy's going to make that decision, and it's Jerry Jones. Are you actually going to try? To this point, they have not. I would say, just if I'm sitting here and looking at the logical options here, number one would be showing up and playing for what he's due, which I think is around $25 million this season. And that's because if you show up and you play this thing out, you're that much closer to having leverage in a potential contract situation next year. If you get franchise tagged, which you would think is a given, you don't have to sign that all the way through. You can't be fined in training camp. You can't be punished other than obviously losing, not being paid, even if you miss regular season games. So then Micah would have significantly more leverage from that perspective. Mm-hmm. However, his agent's history, he's presided over plenty of tricky situations like this, including multiple Jalen Ramsey trades, the Deshaun Watson situation where Deshaun, there were obviously significant circumstances involved in that, but people forget Deshaun Watson didn't play in 2021. He was never suspended. He was never on the exempt list. He just didn't play. He had requested a trade. There were 20-plus allegations of sexual misconduct against him. He just did his work inside and stayed in shape, but did not play that entire year. How did that play out? Well, the following March, they had four different teams bidding on Deshaun Watson. It's a quarterback, but Micah Parsons doesn't have all those other extenuating circumstances surrounding him here. So there are different ways, but the Cowboys are not just going to sit back and go, okay, we'll let you sit out the season. Again, it would depend if we go down that road, what levers end up being pulled. I find it hard to believe that Micah Parsons is simply not going to play. Because remember too, Rich, if there were a situation where, whether it's he retires, whether it's he gets spent, if he does not play, we do come to a point where his contract would toll. He's then still under contract in 2026 for the same number. I don't foresee that being a long-term option, but certainly any player's greatest leverage is withholding your services. You withhold your services week one against the Eagles, even if you get fined, even if you get suspended for doing it, that would make the type of ripple effect that even a long statement requesting a trade on social media has not made to this point.
Tom Pelissero with a detailed answer that causes him also to avoid me giving him a top five list opportunity. I get it. I understand that. And by the way, great job. What is on that mug you keep drinking from purposefully with is that your face?
Photo of me, my dog Doug, and then Rap Sheet.
Claybon making the show.
Some show that no longer exists on NFL Network. But good time. Still a great month.
Tom Pelissero here on the Rich Eisen Show. What did you make of the fact that on Monday Night Football, the two hold-ins, the guy on the road showed up and the guy at home didn't? What do you think? What is that?
Well, Trey Hendrickson, he's done that. He's been at practice. He's been giving pointers to Shamar Stewart and being an active participant in everything that does not involve actually practicing. I know that he had an extensive conversation with Duke Tobin. We saw clips of that on the field in pregame. But to my understanding, nothing has changed. It's the same spot, Rich. We talk about it every week. They've had the big numbers in place. I know he confirmed that to Laura Rutledge, too, when she talked to him before the game. The big numbers have been in place for almost a month. The years, the average per year, the total dollars in the deal, all that is locked in. The issue is that the Bengals don't want to guarantee anything beyond 2025. And at this point, they also have not done anything in terms of moving money around just to try to offset some of the guarantees that are lacking. We know Trey Hendrickson. He said it back in May when he showed up to an OTA. I want a multi-year commitment. The Bengals just have not been willing to do a multi-year commitment. So at this point, Trey Hendrickson continues to proceed as if ultimately he is going to be back with the Bengals. But I have no indication, one way or the other, but I have no indication at this point that Trey Hendrickson, after saying for months, I'm not playing on this existing deal, is simply going to cave and show up and be out there week one. So the same levers exist at that point for the Bengals. They already can be fining him for every single training camp practice that he misses. If eventually he refuses to return and play in a game, they can come at him with the full weight of taking away game checks and suspending him for conduct detrimental. We are not there yet. The relationship, despite some of the public comments, it's not in that place. That's why Trey Hendrickson is still out there wearing a Bengals logo on his shirt. He's not walking around in, you know, non-team issue gear like we've seen Brandon Ayuk and some other players do in the past. So is this salvageable? Absolutely. But as we reported over the weekend, the Bengals have been listening to trade offers for Trey Hendrickson. In order to move him, it's going to have to be a good player, a real player, and a real draft pick. At this point, they turned down a second-round pick and change back before the draft. And at this point, that draft pick isn't even helping you in 2025 on a team that you believe, certainly on the offensive side, can be Super Bowl caliber, even if the defense did not provide a whole lot of reasons in that nationally televised game to make you believe they're going to be substantively better than they were in 2024. As for Terry McLaurin, he's still going through the ramp-up process. A lot of that's happening behind closed doors. The ankle, from what I'm told, is healed. He did have a real ankle injury. That was not a made-up thing. He had a real ankle injury back in January. He rehabbed it in the offseason. He's fine on that standpoint. But again, you have to do conditioning. You have to work your way back in to being ready to play. The fact that McLaurin has begun that ramp-up process would indicate he believes somewhere he's going to be playing in week one. He also has requested a trade. That's been sitting there for a couple of weeks. There have been teams that have called the Commanders, but the sense that people get when they've talked to Washington is we don't really want to do this, so the price is going to be really, really high. They're planning as if Terry McLaurin is going to be back on the field. Could they make one more run at this and make another offer? The sides have not been anywhere in the vicinity of each other. You look at where the wide receiver market has gone. There's a fair argument if you're Terry McLaurin, hey, even at my age, I'm in the same draft class as DK Metcalf, why am I not getting $32, $33, $34 million per year? From the Commander's standpoint, they're looking at a close to 30-year-old receiver. There's not a great long history of guys continuing to produce 1,000-yard seasons. But much like Trey Hendrickson, Terry McLaurin can go, I got 1,000 yards every year. I'm always going to have 80 catches and 1,000 yards and a career-high touchdowns last year. Like, what indication do you get that I'm going to fall off? We'll see where that one goes. These next few days are going to be really important for Washington and Terry McLaurin to see if they've got a path forward here that gets him ready to play right out of the gate and isn't something that drags into the season and all of a sudden brings up all those other levers we've been talking about with all these hold-ins.
Couple quick hitters before you go, Tom Pelissero. How dire is the Niners' wide receiver situation?
Their overall skill position situation is a little bit shaky at this point. I mean, every running back not named Christian McCaffrey, it seems like, is injured. They just put one on injured reserve the other day. And a wide receiver, the fact that, the 49ers always knew Brandon Ayuk had a really serious injury and he was probably not going to be back for week one. Now we're talking about, mid-season or week six or somewhere in there. Ricky Pearsall just to this point has not shown that he can stay on the field. So they made the trade yesterday for Sky Moore. That involves it's a 6-7 pick flop, which in 2027, that's pretty close to the bottom barrel draft compensation, which means Sky Moore wasn't making the Chiefs roster. But in Kansas City, you know, he maybe can impact the game in multiple different ways. At least it's another speed threat type of a wide receiver. You can use him in the return game if you want to. You can, you know, move him around, maybe even line him up in the backfield. We know Kyle Shanahan likes guys with some versatility. And even though Sky Moore has never really gotten to the level in terms of production that the Chiefs wanted when they drafted him as high as they did, he certainly is a guy who's got physical talent. This wide receiver market, Rich, is going to be really fascinating to watch in the coming days here, leading all the way up to Tuesday and maybe even beyond. Because San Francisco still potentially could add another wide receiver. The Saints just traded for Kayshon Vele from Denver and gave up a fourth-round pick and another pick to get him, which is pretty significant for any player of that caliber. The Saints still could look to add another wide receiver, even though they do have, of course, Chris Olave and Rashid Shaheed and Brandon Cooks. They've been looking for multiple different types of receivers. That's a team to keep in mind. You know, could the Jets eventually make a trade for a wide receiver? And how about the Vikings? I started off yesterday by putting out a tweet on that. The Vikings have been working the phones on wide receivers. It's not about Justin Jefferson. He's back from the hamstring. He's going to be good to go week one. But Jordan Addison is suspended for the first three games. Jalen Naylor banged up his hand about 8 days ago. It's unclear at this point when exactly Naylor, who is the number three receiver, is going to be back. It would be a lot to put on Ty Felton and just say, hey, you're a rookie, just roll out there, you know, and start in week one. So I'm operating under the belief right now that the starter opposite Justin Jefferson in week one for the Vikings is probably not on their roster. And if you need a clear sign of that in the past 24 hours, look at the Harrison Phillips trade from the Vikings to the Jets. It is an unusual NFL trade. This is your starting nose tackle, core locker room guy, plays every snap, does all kinds of stuff in the community, and you trade him for 2 sixth-round picks and send Phillips and a seventh-rounder to the Jets. But what that also does, they ended up splitting his salary with the Jets. So this clears almost $4 million in cash and cap space for the Vikings, in addition to giving them 2 extra sixth-round picks, maybe between the cash, the cap, and the draft capital now, you've got a little extra ammunition to go out there. And again, they have called all over the league, but potentially go out and get a wide receiver. If you're looking and saying, well, who's going to be ready to go in week one? There's multiple options, but there's one guy in Carolina right now, Rich, in Adam Thielen, who has produced in this offense. Huh. He's played alongside Justin Jefferson. He knows exactly what Kevin O'Connell wants to do. The Panthers have not wanted to give Thielen away. That's why they didn't trade him before the trade deadline last year. But keep that name in mind, among others, as a potential target who might even be out there in the starting lineup for the Vikings come week one.
Hell of a breadcrumb. 90 seconds I've got, Tom. Matthew Stafford's back. What's up? I mean, you know, Sean McVay's like, yeah, we're going to take it day by day. And then he threw the word week in there. What's going on, man? What's happening?
I have learned more about back injuries than I ever wanted to by having my own, Rich. And I saw some of the same doctors and specialists that NFL players see when I was trying to get the thing fixed. It is a tricky deal when you're talking about non-specific low back issues. They can linger. They can be stuff that doesn't even show up on MRIs. We know that it's an aggravated or herniated disc of some kind. And so every day that he gets through and is able to go, he practiced the last 3 days. I just saw that he's out there on the field again. Those are good signs. You just don't know the first time that he gets hit, how is he going to respond? If he wakes up, you know, and just slept weird, is he going to have an issue? For me, it was, hey, I turned a doorknob and now my back hurts again. Things like that can happen. I'm not an NFL quarterback, Rich. I am an old guy who's dealt with back pain around age 40, which is the spot that Matthew Stafford is in here. You just don't know. Everything seems to be trending in a positive direction. They have Jimmy Garoppolo, of course, on that roster. They have Stetson Bennett, who's been really good through the preseason. I would certainly say, though, don't overlook, if this ever becomes something that blows up and Stafford's out long term, there's still a guy sitting there in Atlanta who has played for Sean McVay, knows the offense, and is currently making $27.5 million to be a backup quarterback. We're not there. Again, everything seems to be trending in the right direction right now for Matthew Stafford, but it very much will be, and you've heard the caution in Sean McVay's words, a day-to-day type of experience. They just have to continue to try to be mindful about how they're loading Matthew Stafford up, bring him along, because the only target that matters is not just playing in week one, but getting through this entire season and being available when the games really count in December and January.
A lot of breadcrumbs, if not loaves of bread right there. Tom, thanks again, brother.
Sourdough.
Good to see you.
Let's talk O'Reilly Auto Parts, people. They're in the business of keeping your car on the road. O'Reilly Auto Parts offers friendly, helpful service and the parts knowledge you need for all your maintenance and repairs. They've got thousands of parts and accessories in stock, either in-store or online, so you never have to worry if you're in a jam. The team at O'Reilly Auto Parts can also test your battery for free, in or out of your car. If it needs to be replaced, they'll help you find just the right battery for your vehicle. Need your windshield wipers replaced or brake light fixed or a quick service? Well, they'll help you find the right part or point you to the nearest local repair shop for help. I know, because it's happened to me. The professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts are your one-stop shop for all things auto do-it-yourself, and you can find what you need in-store or online. Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts today or visit us at OReillyAuto.com/Eisen. That's OReillyAuto.com/Eisen.
Get in the zone, AutoZone.
Bob's had the same car, Betty, since high school, and that was a while ago. Bob's dealt with wipers, slow starts, and a few warning lights. And every time, Bob went to AutoZone, where a friendly AutoZoner helped with free services and the right parts to keep Bob and Betty on the road. No hassles, just help. Everything you need, nothing you don't.
Get in the zone, AutoZone.
Restrictions apply.
So we could have had a movie about somebody who's what, half nothing, 100 pounds nothing. Could have called it David, huh? And then we could have had Bo up there, and everybody could have put their Michigan jerseys on the desk. Did that really happen, David?
Well, of course not. Didn't you know that? But you know something? The other night, you know, you got me going, because the other night I just Googled it. How much of this blank is true? And I started putting in a list of sports movies.
Okay.
You know, We Are Marshall, The Blind Side, Remember the Titans, blah, blah, blah. We come off like a Ken Burns documentary compared to most of those movies.
Oh! Line of the day!
You throw it down!
All right!
I'm not joking, you know?
Do you want to explain to me what you told me on Monday, that Rudy has heard what I've had to say about this subject matter?
This is the best part.
This is so good.
I haven't told my guys about this, but please, I give you the floor. Is this true that Rudy, that this, what I have said into this microphone has filtered in the direction of Mr. Rudiger?
We're directly to Las Vegas, Nevada.
Yes.
And it was very interesting. I have not talked to Rudy. Angelo has.
Okay.
And apparently Rudy was pretty incensed enough to go to his neighbor, Mike Tyson, and ask him if he would train him to get you in the ring to put you where you belong.
hold on a second. Back the truck up. Hold on. So the real Rudy lives in Las Vegas next to Mike Tyson?
Who he has apparently asked for
training tips?
Advice, so he could come
Rudy could. I heard this through Angelo.
What?
Angelo spoke to him, but it could have been. I know that Floyd Mayweather. It might have been Mayweather.
No!
Mayweather lived in his neighborhood.
Oh my gosh!
That's fantastic.
And by the way, not in the movie. What was not in the movie is that when Rudy was at Holy Cross, and he was, trying to come off as a Notre Dame student, getting in the cheering section, painting the helmets, and all that. He also joined what they called, and I don't know if they do it today, but it was a campus-wide boxing tournament, and it was called the Bengal Bouts. And dudes, he won it. As a Holy Cross student masquerading as a Notre Dame student. And he won. And we had it originally in the script, but we had to cut it out.
Well, now hearing about his ability to fight.
Yeah,
and
you better
his
start playing
fight,
nice with Rudy.
Boy, what a great film this is, David. I mean, now that you tell me the backstory, I mean, wow. It's quite a moving piece of cinema that you put together.
One of the favorite people, Susan, and I love David Hansford. Love, 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 love. What a good dude. You had him on after Gene Hackman passed away. I was out of the chair.
I did. He was incredible.
I know. We're opining about the 17th best sports movie in the history of sports movies, according to Hollywood Reporter.
17.
17.
And I know you love that movie, so I know that's...
Hoosiers is number one for me. I go back and forth about what's number two. The Natural is such a perfect movie.
Yeah.
Perfect, perfect movie. You know...
You just have to come up with your own list, Rich.
Field of Dreams. Come on, man. Bring It On. Seriously. Like, how do you do that? And you represent...
No Varsity Blues either,
and right? You represent your... Well, I mean, it's not about...
Friday Night Lights.
Shaving cream.
So, Suze, I know earlier I said I was waiting for the green light to ask you some questions. Well, guess what? Ding, ding, that light turned green. So let's talk about it.
Yeah, we can talk about the loneliness of the long-distance runner, a 1962 British coming-of-age film.
It's not going to be that type of talk. I got to be honest. You know, you weren't here before you called in that day. We were just talking about how sometimes social media is so awful, right? But there are those moments where something happens one night and it just pulls everybody together. And that was what was going on when everybody was watching Rich Ho's SportsCenter. And he mentioned that you and the kids are at home. You know, it was the first time they got to see their dad do his thing. But like, in all honesty, like what was it feeling like for you to see him? Knowing the whole story, knowing how he really felt, knowing what he went through, like...
What we went through.
Yeah. Like, I mean, I made a joke about the not having a job and marry thing, but I'm sure that had to like really weigh on him and you at the same time. So it's like, that must have been so amazing for you to watch him do that.
It was so surreal, TJ. Mm-hmm. I mean, I can't even tell you that I took a video of them rolling the music, rolling the credits, like going with the tease. And when I heard the voiceover of the tease, I audibly said out loud, oh my God, I can't believe this.
Yeah.
Because that music brought us back to exactly where we were. And because we lived it every single night, it was really emotional. It was really beautiful to watch. I was really so proud of what you did and how well you handled it. I was so nervous. I was pacing before. I was texting with Brockman.
You were pacing.
We got to get through the A's. I was pacing. But I just wanted to get through the A's because I was nervous watching him. Mm-hmm. But I knew that you weren't nervous, which is incredible.
Well, I mean, it's not, you know, we've been waiting 22 years, you know, and you knew Stu too. I mean, Stu was, he called you S squared, you know, that was his nickname for you, S squared. You knew him as well as anybody.
That picture we show of you and him at your wedding, and he's like, was he pointing at your ring? Or
yeah, because you know, he was playing the two of us to the same spot that I wanted to get to eventually, and we did. And he held my hand, looked at the ring, and he, with a smile on his face, like, you know, this is happening.
We did it.
And then, like, we did it. Yeah.
But the chair was such a beautiful nod. Yeah. And I think any of us who knew him and loved him just felt exactly like you did. That he should have been there, and he would have been so proud to have been there.
He would have.
Yeah.
It would have been amazing. And
his spirit was going through social media, too, with you, man.
Which is great. Like, that's what it's all about, because I know how, you know, synonymous SportsCenter and us together.
Yeah.
And it was funny. When I first walked onto that set, and I walked over to the chair that Stuart normally sits in, and put my stuff there because I'm camera left on game day morning, which is what I've been used to sitting in for over a decade plus on that show.
Oh, yeah. So.
And so I put my stuff there, and then I thought to myself, wait a minute. And the other folks on the set who are the producers were like, don't you think you should sit in that one?
And that was always that
was your chair. Great attention to detail for
them. They were awesome.
Yeah.
They were awesome. Because I put my just out of complete, total habit over the last few years, I walked over to the chair that Stuart normally sits in because, you know, that's where I'm always over there for game day morning.
Yeah, and a lot of people don't know that he sat there just because it was harder for him to see out of one of his eyes, and he sat there because it was easier for him to handle the teleprompter.
Right. And then that was the deal back in the day, is you got to sit where you wanted to sit on the SportsCenter set based on your tenure.
Okay.
So that was Dan Patrick's seat for his time. So whenever I hosted with Dan, I got in the other one. So I would ping pong back and forth quite a bit. I was always the low tenured anchor on the pole until I think like maybe John Anderson showed up. And at any rate, it was wild. And they're like, that's your seat. And that was what then gave birth to the idea of let's keep Stewart's chair there empty and put a rundown there. Mm. But, you know, I was waiting 22 years for that. It was like riding a bike. Like riding a bike. But
that
I love
music,
how you pointed the music.
The music is so great. Right? I had PTSD of running down the hallway at PCR 4.
Man.
There was a guy, his name That's is, I should have sent this back to the guys, but there was a guy named Nicholas on YouTube.
Okay.
Left a comment really quickly. He said, I don't think Rich will ever see this, but I was on the show last night. I did the studio monitors from here in Bristol and controlled the graphics behind Rich. Just wanted to say how honored I was to be a part of your tribute to Stewart. That will forever go down as a highlight of my career. We all enjoyed working with you, all of us in the control room.
Wow.
Said it was one of the nights we never forget working here.
Wow.
And thank you for letting me be a small part of it.
+1.
So that was someone on, I left the YouTube.
Wow.
Yeah.
You should read YouTube comments more often, TJ. Back to wrap up the show for the hour three coming up. Hey, folks, let me ask you a serious question. Did you know that driving high is considered driving under the influence? That's right. Driving under the influence of marijuana is against the law in every state. That means even in states where marijuana is legal. That means driving high could get you a DUI. And if you think law enforcement officers can't tell when you're driving high, well, my friend, you're wrong. If you're high, they can tell. Your friends can tell. Your coworkers can tell. Even your parents can tell. Everyone can tell. So what makes you think that law enforcement officers don't know when you're driving high? You'd be wrong. They can tell too. Driving under the influence of marijuana can slow your response time and change how you perceive time and speed. So even if you think you're fine to drive when you're high, you're not. Because the bottom line is, if you feel different, you drive different. And driving high is driving under the influence. So remember, drive high, get a DUI. Paid for by NHTSA.